On my good horse I called you, my shiny black bears, to the playhouse of fortune, to take the bright silver and gold you have taken from somebody else. And as we go riding,
you're tuned to WEOS Geneva Ithaca or WXXE Fenner Syracuse. This is Unwelcome Guests. I'm Chris Sturr. On the program today, we will focus on recent developments in the labor movement. In our first hour, we'll hear about the growing movement by and on behalf of farm workers in New York State. Farm workers continue to be legally excluded from the labor protections afforded other workers. Jim Schmidt, Executive Director of Farm Worker Legal Services of New York State, discusses legal ramifications of these exclusions, including the prospect of deportation farm workers may face if they hold H-2A or guest worker immigration status. Later in the hour, Tara Thibault of Rural and Migrant Ministries and coordinator of this year's Farm Worker Advocacy Day provides an update on the omnibus bill before the legislature that would eliminate the provisions excluding farm workers from legal protections. In the second hour, we'll hear about the struggles on behalf of five African-American dock workers from South Carolina, known as the Charleston Five, who are defending themselves against felony riot charges in connection with their participation in union activity. We'll hear about government complicity with the shipping industry's attempts to bust dock workers' unions worldwide, and about the International Solidarity Campaign in defense of the Charleston Five. At the end of the program, we'll have three reports made in late April and early May of this year in the midst of the sit-in staged by the Living Wage Campaign at Harvard University. With an endowment in the billions, Harvard University pays some of its service workers as little as $6.75 an hour, a wage it's impossible to live on in the Boston area. A coalition of students, workers, faculty, and community members at Harvard have been pressing the university administration to pay a living wage, to stop outsourcing its janitorial and dining hall jobs, and to take steps to ensure that its products are not made under sweatshop conditions. The living wage activism at Harvard is part of a recent trend of student labor solidarity on campuses across the country. Campus activists are drawing the connections between undemocratic and hierarchical decision-making processes at universities and more global struggles. These are the sounds of Farmworker Advocacy Day 2000. Last May, we reported on the annual lobbying effort sponsored by activists and advocacy groups to pressure the New York State Legislature to revise labor law so that it covers farm workers. Agricultural workers in New York State, farmhands, poultry workers, fruit pickers, dairy workers, are expressly excluded from the labor legislation that protects workers in other industries. This means that the state's farm workers, including roughly 47,000 seasonal migrant workers from Central America or the Caribbean, are subject to working conditions so objectionable that they have been outlawed for other workers. In our region of the state, seasonal workers pick fruit, apples, peaches, strawberries, in the Finger Lakes region and especially near Rochester. They work in the vineyards on Cayuga, Seneca, and Cuca Lakes. And they pick sweet corn, which is too tender to be harvested by machine. The seasonal workers in our area were, for years, African-American migrants from the southern U.S. Today, they are mostly from Central America, especially Mexico, and from Haiti. Year-round farm workers milk cows on the many dairy farms in our region. Farm workers are excluded from the guarantees of disability insurance, overtime pay, a day of rest, and health and safety regulations that workers in other industries take for granted. Most importantly, farm workers are not guaranteed the right to organize unions and bargain collectively, rights guaranteed to other workers in the state constitution. This means that when agricultural workers try to press their employers for better wages or working conditions, protection against harmful pesticides, better housing, overtime pay, or a day off each week, their employers can fire them with legal impunity. Conditions for all farm workers are exacerbated by the fact that many farm workers are undocumented immigrants. Employers often take advantage of workers' immigration status to impose harsh conditions on workers. Many migrant workers who are documented are legally in the category of guest workers, covered by the government's H-2A program, which restricts those workers to work only for the employers who brought them here. This creates even more opportunity for abuse, since employers can not only fire such workers, but also have them deported. Clearly, though, whether documented or not, migrant farm workers are indispensable to the agricultural industry, and should be regarded as such by labor law and by their employers. Activists and advocates have been pressing for the passage of an omnibus bill, the Farm Worker Fair Labor Practices Act, which would completely equalize the labor laws and public health laws protecting farm workers. Passage of the omnibus bill would eliminate the disparities between the laws covering farm workers and those covering other workers. Lobbyists for the industry defend the legal disparities by claiming that there is something special about the agricultural industry, that it is seasonal, or that its profit margins are not large enough to support better wages and working conditions for workers, or the risk of labor actions like strikes. But seasonal workers in other industries, tourism for example, are free to organize unions and bargain collectively. Equally essential workers, teachers, firefighters, nurses, are free to form unions. There's no good reason to treat farm workers differently. Farm lobbyists have also argued that equalizing the laws would hurt the quote-unquote family farm. But farming in New York State is big business. True family farms rarely employ anyone outside the immediate family. What's at stake, for the farm lobby, are the profits of big agribusiness, not family farms. Just after this year's Farmworker Advocacy Day, on May 2nd, the omnibus bill was passed in the State Assembly, but the Senate has yet to act on the bill. Later this hour, we'll provide an update on the current situation in the legislature and information about what listeners can do to help the effort to equalize legal protection for farm workers. But first, we'll hear an interview I conducted last fall with Jim Schmidt, Executive Director of Farmworker Legal Services of New York State. Why don't we start by talking about H-2A guest workers?
Okay.
Tell me what that status is.
Okay, the H-2A program, H-2A is just a subsection of the immigration law which allows growers to bring in foreign guest workers if they can certify that there is a shortage of available U.S. eligible workers. And that's a program that's been around in some form for the past 60 or 70 years. The H-2A program, as it's being used in New York State, and it's on the increase. In fact, in western New York, there was a 60% increase. Growers traditionally would bring in workers from offshore, from Jamaica. But now they've expanded the program into Mexico and into Central America. And what they do is they just apply to the Department of Labor to say that there's a shortage, and then the application is approved. Under the law, what's supposed to happen is the growers are supposed to do active recruitment where there are available farm workers. If they're not successful, DOL does a survey to certify that there, in fact, is a shortage. And then after that process, they approve the application and they bring the workers in. Guest workers, when they come in, H-2A guest workers, when they come into the United States, have very little legal standing. They can only work for one employer. If they complain or if they don't like the working conditions, there's very little they can do about that, because if the grower decides to fire them, they get deported immediately. The advantage to the employer is that there's no Social Security, there is no unemployment insurance paid for these workers. They do pay higher than the minimum wage, but what's happened is that the offset of not paying Social Security. What we have found over the last 5 or 6 years, and this is just not in New York State, but nationally, that the rate of unemployment with U.S. farm workers or eligible workers, those who have a work authorization, and many of the farm workers who came into the United States back in the 80s who received amnesty under the 1986 amnesty law cannot find work. They're applying for jobs, but they're not being hired because growers don't actively recruit. They may put an ad in the Rochester paper in March looking for workers, but workers in the South and Florida, they don't read it, they don't see it. And so growers are bringing more and more of these H-2A workers in, even though there is an available supply of labor in this country. One of the growers in the past always looked for help in urban areas. Syracuse, Rochester, Buffalo was always a place where they recruited day hall workers. They would come in, go down to the unemployment office, pick up 50 or 60 guys, take them out into the fields. They would work them. They would pay them. That has dried up completely. Because it's much more profitable for the growers to bring in the H-2A workers. What we're finding also under the terms of the H-2A law is that if any U.S. worker applies for work during the first half of the contract, they've got to be hired. But what the growers are doing, even if they have U.S. workers available and are working, when they bring in the H-2A workers, they then fire the U.S. workers. Mm-hmm. So we've had a couple of civil rights cases against growers. I mean, it's the same old thing as instead of taking jobs here and taking them to low-wage jobs, non-union jobs in Mexico or Guatemala, they can't take the land and transport it out, but they can bring in workers under the most horrible working conditions and housing conditions. And with the expansion of the H-2A program, we have seen housing and working conditions deteriorate from the mid-80s.
What about illegal immigrants? And I mean, are the H-2A workers replacing some people who wouldn't have had any kind of immigration status at all or would have been illegal?
Yeah, I mean, it's the H-2A workers do have immigration status because they have to go through and they have to get visas, work visas to come here. And there's always that tension of immigrants or undocumented workers coming into the United States looking for work, and that certainly has been on the increase, and that will continue to increase. And people come across the borders and work here for a few months, and then return and go back home. Are the H-2A replacing that group of workers to some degree, but not? I don't think it's a major impact on undocumented workers. The big impact is on those workers who came here in the 80s. Became citizens or became permanent aliens, they can't find the jobs now.
Right.
And U.S. workers who were traditionally farm workers.
Right.
And there's a racist element to this. Mm-hmm. I mean, in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s, a lot of African Americans were hired, both from Georgia and Florida and the Carolinas and out of the urban areas. And you find very few African Americans now working in agriculture. They've been replaced by the new immigrants. And I've had a grower tell me that they like the more docile workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the big stick that they have.
Right.
If you're an undocumented worker or if you're an H-2A worker and you complain, you're going to be deported and you're not going to be brought back.
Now, before we leave this topic, this program, is there some rationale that that policymakers or the government gives for this program about? I mean, I know I've heard a lot about legislation to hire foreign guest workers to do high-tech work. Is this the same program as that?
Or no, it's not. I mean, it's under the same section.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are H2Bs or H2Cs or whatever.
Yeah.
There is another subsection. Yeah, it's the same. The rationale is that there's a shortage of available workers,
right.
skilled workers,
right.
to do this work.
But that's not true.
Well, from all of the studies shown, no, it's not true. In fact, the Department of Labor did their own internal study and said that both the Department of Labor, the State Department of Labor, the Job Service, and the growers do not actively recruit. But and with 20% or higher unemployment within farm workers, then the jobs would be made available. What's happened is the fact is if you have a shortage under our economic system, you increase wages or benefits or provide better working conditions. But the reverse is happening here because of the H-2A. Wages, in fact, has declined. Working conditions have declined. And housing conditions have declined. So a lot of workers say, why should I do this work? Why should I go out there and be treated the way I'm being treated, work 12, 14 hours a day, not have water, not have toilets in the fields, not have a day of rest? Why should I do this when I can go down to McDonald's and make $5.50 an hour? Up north in Clinton County, there was a big spinach factory that always used local labor, always, for years and years. They now import workers from California or H-2A workers because the local folks aren't going to work under those conditions at those wages. But if the wages were increased, you would attract more labor.
And you think that that's mostly because the conditions and the pay have gone down for the farm workers, not necessarily because the McDonald's is paying all that much more.
No, it's because the working conditions have gone.
Right,
the working conditions and pay has deteriorated.
Right.
Yeah, so we've noticed that, especially in housing. There was an attempt to improve housing in the 80s, and there was some improvement, but that basically has stopped in the last 10 or 12 years.
Right.
And one only needs to look at the trend in employment in agriculture from the mid-70s, and as the African-American workers began to be organized, began to be more vocal, they were replaced with the most recent immigrants. And if you look at where they came from, every time there was an uprising or a dictator put in power, when people fled, they came to the United States. Many of them found their way into agriculture. That's their introduction into American society, was through that stream. And I had another point, and I forgot what it was right now. But and each group, like the Haitian workers, were a major workforce in the mid to late 80s. But the Haitian workers were family oriented. They traveled in a group. They were very vocal. They wanted what was due them, what was promised them. They stood for their rights. They made wonderful clients. Growers didn't want them.
Mm-hmm.
They replaced the Haitian workers then with the Guatemalan workers and workers from El Salvador. And so the pattern of what was happening in Latin America and in Mexico, you would know then, and the next trend would be that they would be here in the United States in agriculture in New York State.
Right. Okay, well, maybe we can move on to talk about, or maybe just to get a little overview of the issues, we can talk about the legislation that people were pressing for at Farm Worker Advocacy Day back in May.
Well, the ironic thing is we were not asking for any new legislation. What we were asking is that farm workers be treated like every other worker. We didn't want anything new. We just wanted the exclusions to be removed from labor law to include farm workers. Farm workers, by law, are not allowed to engage in collective bargaining. Farm workers, by law, are not allowed to do not receive overtime pay. Farm workers do not get a day of rest. Farm workers, up until 2 years ago, did not have the right to have drinking water under state law in the camps. Last year, we got toilets, drinking water in 98, and toilets in the field in 99. This is more than 100 years after every other place that had it. We wanted workers to be covered by unemployment insurance instead of having a separate law that treats farm workers different from other workers. So what we were asking the legislature is not to pass any new laws, but just take out that section that excluded farm workers. And the argument was it'd be too expensive for growers, but the mom-and-pop grocery store on the corner who's competing against all of the big supermarkets, they have to abide by the same laws. Why shouldn't agricultural workers?
Right. Yeah, so I mean, we're talking about big farms and small farms, but how do you respond to the argument that this is bad for small family farms?
Yeah. Well, there's a myth out here, and there's a myth in New York State, and we keep raising this myth as we have seen this, is that when all of the exclusions were passed were passed in the 30s, when there were truly small family farms where the whole family worked. You don't find that as much anymore, except in the dairy industry. And the dairy industry needs to be separated out from when you're talking about fruits and vegetables, the big apple growers, because the vast majority, there are smaller farms, but they're larger. They're family corporations. They have diversified. Because one of how we know this is, before we do any litigation, if we can't settle a case with a grower, we look at his financial records through Dun & Bradstreet. And these are big operations. The incomes, and these are, you talk about million-dollar operations. You're not talking about the mom and pop trying to make the 5 or 10 or 20 acres survive. The land has been concentrated into the hands of fewer farms. They're much bigger. They can well afford to treat the workers there the same way other workers are treated in other industry. Dairy industry, there are still small family dairy operations which are going out of business because of the competition. And even there we've seen the concentration of much larger dairy farms versus the small family operated. So there's been this great myth created by the Farm Bureau in order to continue this unjust practice of treating farm workers. But we've looked at one case, and I won't mention where it was, is they admitted under cross-examination that their net income for that year was $15 million, and yet they were paying workers sub-minimum wage, and they stayed outside, literally 12 of them outside under a tree, and they built their own little shanty. And the workers won that case. But that's an example of some of the situations. This doesn't apply to all growers, and I don't want to create the picture that all the growers out there are bad. There are some very decent growers out there who provide decent housing and decent working conditions and provide more than just minimum wage and pay overtime and pay unemployment. So we're dealing with that group of workers, growers that abuse the situation. And, the Farm Bureau says, well, all of the workers are making $7.15 an hour, $8.15 an hour. They have all of these rights. Well, if that's true, then why continue to fight the removal of the exclusions? If, in fact, all of these are being provided now, then agree and just take away the exclusions.
Right.
So something is wrong somewhere.
So, what was the outcome of that legislative?
It was very interesting because Dennis Hughes, who's the president of the FFL-CIO, once he was introduced into this, and Dennis is new, is the president of the FFL-CIO, he threw his whole weight and support behind the farm worker justice movement. He just said that this was going to be the civil rights struggle of the year 2000 for labor. And they pressured the legislature, and with the Daily News out of New York City, which did about 30 different editorials, in fact received, I can't remember the award they received, we did get, and at the end of 1999, a minimum wage bill for farm workers that pushed the state minimum wage to the federal minimum wage. And then there was a whole move. Kathy Nolan, Senator Nolan, introduced an omnibus bill, which was to remove all of the restrictions. And the state Senate held hearings across the state saying that they were going to pass new laws, they were going to remove the restrictions, they were going to do what was right. They had hearings across the state, and they told everybody that things were going to happen. Well, the Senate passed a bill that was obscene. It was an insult to people. They granted a day of rest after every 28 days, basically, the workers would have a day of rest, but they would have to work for 28 straight days, and then within that period, they would have to have a day of rest. The bill didn't deal with anything. Well, the assembly refused to pass it, agree with it. So nothing happened.
Wow.
Nothing happened. Even after the leadership in both the Senate and the assembly, or basically in the Senate, said that they were going to do what was right, after the alliance of both the FFL-CIO, every single major church, every major temple was supported this, letters were sent from bishops and from rabbis across the state saying, look, you, this has got to stop. Nothing happened. So the struggle will continue, and I think the Farm Worker Alliance or the Farm Worker Justice Campaign is now going to elevate the struggle even more.
Yeah, how? What are the plans? How is that going to work?
Well, it's I'm not quite sure what the plans are, but you know, people are talking about doing marches across the state, doing fast on the Capitol steps, you know, elevating the struggle, saying this situation has to stop. You know, and the thing is, we're not asking for anything new. It's just remove the restrictions, treat the workers as all other workers. So it's not like they got to come up with some new creative bill. Now, it's not going to cost anybody anything either.
Right. Now, when I was in Albany for Farm Worker Advocacy Day, it occurred to me that the most important thing that people were pressing for was. To remove the exemption of farm workers from the collective bargaining protections. But, of course, you can organize a union if you don't have those protections. It's just a lot harder. But, I mean, if the AFL-CIO is giving their support, are they willing to help organize the farm workers? Or are they waiting for the legislation to?
I think right now they're waiting for the legislation to pass. There have been contracts that we've been involved with because we provide we're the legal arm of CETA, which is a farm worker controlled organization in the Mid-Hudson. They're now in Western New York, and they have negotiated some contracts with independent with growers. There have been two contracts in the last year and a half that they've been able to go in and they've been able to negotiate. And basically, the question is, if you don't want litigation because you've got all these violations, sign a contract with us, improve working conditions, improve wages, and we'll provide the workers, and the growers have done it. And there have been growers who've come to me, this is after one of the hearings, have come to me and said, we hope you win because we provide decent housing, we provide a livable wage, and our working conditions are, we have to compete with growers who don't do it.
Right.
We would like a level playing field.
Right.
And so there has been support from within the agricultural community that these laws that the restrictions be removed because they're doing it. And some of these growers have said, yeah, you know, I'd have no problem signing the contract.
Right.
The only thing I want is I don't want the workers to strike when I'm ready to harvest. But it's interesting. A few years ago, a group of workers out not too far from Ithaca gave me a call, and they were going to go on strike. And the pickers had to be picked the next day. And they said they went to the grower, and they said they were not going to work. They called me to come down to help negotiate with the grower. We went down, and they had two things they wanted. They wanted a nickel a bucket more, which when you looked at what it was going to be, you're talking just a few hundred dollars, maybe up to $1,000, and they wanted the foreman to stop using racist terms to them and abusing their woman, and verbally abusing. We sat with the grower. It was 11 o'clock at night. He had to have his pickles dead. He consented to both agreements and put it in writing, and the next day his pickles were picked. Workers did their work. Things were fine, and the workers went home, and he was happy. So there was a benefit.
Right.
You know, when workers travel this far to make this to work, they travel 2,000 or 3,000 miles to work in a very hard industry. That's the only time they're going to make money, because when they go back home, there's a good chance they're not going to work. They're very productive. I mean,
right.
Growers will tell you, if they're honest with you, they will tell you that, yeah, the workers work hard. How does this stuff get harvested if they don't work?
Right. Well, even that job action was really courageous for them, because it sounds like everything worked out, but you could imagine the grower saying, well, I'm not going to hire these people again, even if he caves in
Well, the same situation applied up here in Western New York 2 years it must have been 5 years ago, where five workers went to the grower and just wanted a small amount of increase in the working and the wages. He fired off five of them. He just fired him. Said, "No, good, get out of here. You're not coming back."
And that's, of course, not illegal. It would be illegal in any other industry.
It was not illegal under New York State, but under federal law, he violated the working conditions under the Fair Labor under the Agricultural Worker Protection Act. So we were able to he rescinded the firing and paid the workers back wages. So there are ways around to getting it. Clearly, it would be much easier for workers if they had protection under New York State. And most of the growers say, well, it's going to lead to massive unionization. Well, there's no mass unionization anywhere. It's just that workers should have the right to be able to say to their employer, I want water in the field. The biggest single complaint and the biggest issue that workers want, even when we negotiated these two or three contracts, was to be treated with respect. They didn't want the racial slurs, and they didn't want their woman who worked side by side with them to be verbally abused in the fields. That's the biggest thing the workers keep talking about. We want respect.
Right. Okay. Well, why don't we return to the issue of dairy workers? You, when we spoke before, you said that that some dairy workers are treated as independent contractors. Maybe you could talk about that.
Yeah. This is in farm workers, especially in Ohio, the pickle workers, picking the cucumber workers, were treated as independent contractors, and there's been lawsuits, and the courts have said, no, they're not independent workers because they have no control over their work environment. What we're finding now in the dairy industry is that the grower is when they produce the milk goes to a milk distributor. And the grower then gets a check twice a month from Dairy Leo or whoever buys some milk cooperative that buys the milk. What the dairy employer is saying to the cooperative, cut a check, pay the workers directly. Out of the money that you owe me, pay the workers directly on the 1st and the 15th of the month. So the check doesn't come from the grower or the dairy owner. It comes from this milk cooperative. Then the grower is saying to the worker, you're an independent contractor. I don't pay Social Security. I don't take any taxes out. I don't pay unemployment insurance. I don't have to worry about workers' comp because you don't work for me. Yet the dairy employer provides the housing, sets the working conditions, and nothing's changed. So the worker has no control. There's a host test standard under both the Fair Labor Standards Act, under Social Security, and under New York State law, which if you're an independent contractor, and one of the things is that you have a right to decide the hours you're going to work, when you're going to do the job, you sign a contract, you can't be fired, they can't dismiss you just because you don't work when you set your own hours. We have control over this. And so they're treating more and more of these dairy workers. And dairy workers initially thought this was a great idea. The reason why is they were getting paid on a regular basis. And so the checks were guaranteed because a lot of the small dairy operations, the workers would wait an extra week or 2 weeks. And they thought it was a much better benefit. And their checks were higher because there's no taxes taken out. But when it came due to pay the taxes, they had to pay the federal tax, state tax, Social Security tax, they didn't have it. And they said, you know, they don't make enough to save. And then when they got injured, there was no workers' comp. Then if they got fired, there was no unemployment. So now they're saying, where's the benefit to us? And there is no benefit to them.
So you're going to challenge, this is going to be challenged on the same basis as the pickle workers?
Well, we hope to. I mean, one of the things you can't challenge until you get clients, the workers know it if they become clients and file complaints, there's a danger of losing their job. And they need to work. So.
Can you tell me a little bit about how local and rural communities have received these farm workers?
That's a two-edged sword because certainly in a lot of the local communities you get a good response from the churches and from the civic groups and from some of the organizations, the more organized. But there's also an increase in violence against farm workers. Just recently, three farm workers were standing on a corner in a Wayne County town village. And there was a big wedding going on up the street, and a couple of the guest came down, harassed the farm workers, went back up and got 15 or 20 more, came down and beat up the farm workers. And what's not funny, it's ironic that the bride got in her car, drove down and kept hitting one of the farm workers with her car and put him in the hospital.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah. And the police were called, and the police took away the two farm workers and left the third one there for somebody else to call, take him to the hospital in Syracuse. And there were eyewitnesses, white eyewitnesses, who were outraged and told the police that the farm workers were the victims. They did not initiate this contact. And we're seeing more and more of that, where townsfolks gangs of people will attack farm workers or attack farm workers in the camps. And that's been on the rise. Part of that problem is also due to the treatment of the local police, either the sheriff or, in some cases, the state police, have been targeting farm workers to enforce immigration. So they will stop farm workers and ask for their immigration papers or detain them even when they're legal. We had three farm workers go into a motor vehicle in Monroe County, and two of the workers had just transported the third. And the people in the Department of Motor Vehicle said that the documents that was being used by one were forged documents and called the police. The police came. They interviewed one of the workers who only spoke English or Spanish and wanted to see his papers. And he said to an interpreter, "I'm a U.S. citizen. I was born in California. Here's my driver's license. I don't have any other papers. If I ask you what kind of papers you got, you'd have a driver's license, Social Security card. You couldn't prove you were a U.S. citizen." And the other one gave the officer his immigration card, his legal documented immigration card. They put all three of them in irons in the Department of Motor Vehicle and took them to the police station. And then when they called the INS said, "Well, the guy's a U.S. citizen. I think we must be. We don't have any record of him. And how do you know he's not?" And the other guy is a legal documented worker here. And we're finding more and more of that for Latino workers being targeted by local police, which create the atmosphere for, I think, others then to respond in a more racist way. And what's happened then, and also has happened, and again, this is not the majority of cases, but it's on the increase. A lot of workers will go into stores and not be allowed to shop in the stores, or won't be waited on, or will have people who will follow them around the store, and to make them feel like that they're being watched, which they are, and that they're not welcome in the store. So it is a two-way sword, and in a lot of communities there are receptions for workers, and these usually come out of the church-based groups. There's reception for the workers to welcome them in. There's church services. There's a picnic. And some of the other social service agencies will provide free food or whatever is needed to meet the needs when the workers come in. So it's a tough question to answer. But in a lot of these communities, there's an incredible lot of racism against foreign-born people, or people who look different, or people who speak a different language.
One question about the police response: is there some reason that they are stepping up their targeting of?
We thought maybe they had an agreement with INS, that the INS was asking them to help enforce, and the INS does not have the agreement. There is plenty of court cases which say it is not the jurisdiction of the local police to check on someone's immigration. They can ask if someone has documentation, but they can't enforce it. They can't detain them. They can't stop them, as long as they're not using it to commit fraud, as long as they're not using it to get some benefits that they're not entitled to. And I think it is that the police, and we've seen this in urban areas, and a lot of cases are out of control. It's racism. These are white officers who live in the community, who don't like people of color, who don't like foreigners in their community, and they hassle them. How we know this is we get continuous calls from growers of their workers being stopped, being detained, being hassled, by the local police, and they've asked us to stop this. And we met with, as an example, with the sheriff in Wayne County, and he put out a memo telling his officers not to enforce immigration, not to stop. Mm-hmm. We want all of the, and I'm not saying that they don't, but at least from the top down, they have come to realize that this is a problem and they don't want to do that. This guy's an ex-grower. He also knows that the workers are needed in Wayne County, mm-hmm. and you can't hassle them and expect them to come back if they're getting that treatment. But we have not got that kind of response from other communities. Our biggest caseload or the biggest concern that we receive from workers is police stopment of them on the roads. And we've had workers who are U.S. citizens who have been stopped 8 or 9, 10 times. We had a case in one small community. We had to go up to the police chief and say, look, this one police officer is stopping this guy every time he comes home. Every single time he waits for him and stops him. Mm-hmm. And it did stop. It did stop the practice. But I also know, and I don't want to go into a whole lot of details, the FBI is looking into some of these as violations of people's civil rights.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
This continual harassment.
Wow. Okay, one last question. What can people do? I mean, it sounds in a lot of ways as if there's a movement going on in New York State to improve conditions and for farm workers and help them organize to get more control over their working conditions and their lives while they're here. What can people do who want to help out with that?
One of the biggest thing, and there has been, this has been kind of not negative, but it's looking at the kind of the side of this isn't very pleasant. We're looking at some of the abuses in the working conditions, but there has been a growing movement and outcry from average citizens, led by, as I say, from the FFL-CIO, led by churches and temples, and there are many wonderful ministers and priests and rabbis who have been actively involved in this. As you know, being at the in May in Albany, there was almost over 1,000 people. This thing is growing. People are doing things in the local community. Is to contact their local legislator, both in the Assembly and the Senate, and say, we want all the exclusions removed from farm workers. One of the things we hear from legislators is, we don't hear from our constituents. We don't know what the constituents want, or our constituency are the growers, and they tell us. And a lot of good people in those communities just, they don't know about the farm worker situation. So that's the big thing they can do. And they can meet up with their local farm worker organizations in the community to see if they can either volunteer, they can give donations. But the big thing is to move their churches or the civic groups to take a stand in support of farm workers. That would be the single biggest thing. And just to send a letter to the local area representative saying, state senator or assembly person, we want you to end the exclusions of farm workers. And if we could get thousands of people doing that, we would change that situation immediately. And the Farm Bureau is a huge lobby in Albany. They have 5 full-time lobbyists. And if you look at the contributions they make, they're one of the biggest contributors to campaigns.
Right.
And so they do their homework. We don't have the money to do that. I mean, the movement is a very poor movement. It's a people's movement. And so people out there who listen to you can really play an important role.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot.
Well, thank you.
It's been very informative for our listeners.
I enjoyed it. Yeah. Great, thanks.
That was Jim Schmidt, Executive Director of Farmworker Legal Services of New York State. For an update on the efforts to pass the omnibus bill that would eliminate the exemption of farmworkers from state labor laws, I spoke last Thursday with Tara Thibault of Rural and Migrant Ministries, an organization which has been active in the struggle on behalf of farm workers.
Maybe you can start by just telling us about this year's Farmworker Advocacy Day, what its main aims were and how it went.
Okay. Farmworker Advocacy Day this year was May 1st, and the purpose or the theme of it, rather, as determined by CETA, which is our farm worker organization. It's actually run by former farm workers and immigrants themselves, was the removal of all exclusions. In other words, nothing short of equality.
Right.
And what we did was We gathered as many supporters as we could, which is the same as we've done in the past, and I believe that we were able to reach out to a few more organizations and groups, particularly students, this year, and have them march into Albany from our registration point to the state capitol, where we held a rally. And from there, some people attended visits specifically with Republican senators to put forth the issues of justice for farm workers and removing the exclusions that still remain in the state constitution to equality for farm workers in their workplace.
Mm-hmm. So some of the exclusions are in the constitution. Are some of them statutory as well, or?
They are. They're on the books, specifically mentioning that farm workers and migrant or seasonal workers are excluded from these basic laws. So.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, I know some of the remaining exclusions are things like the right to organize and a day of rest and
right.
so on. And which do you think are the most important, or the ones that activists and advocates and farm workers themselves are most concerned about?
Honestly, I believe that the movement is really concerned about the fact of the exclusions existing at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in terms of finding a couple that are most contentious, I'm sure that we could probably finger like the collective bargaining or overtime pay or the day of rest or disability as being, you know, the ones that are really at the forefront that affect most farm workers,
mm-hmm.
If not all. But in terms of there being any exclusions at all, I think it's just the fact of them existing,
mm-hmm.
which is the most troubling.
Yeah, I mean, that seemed, I was at Farm Worker Advocacy Day last year, and that seemed like the best thing about the strategy of gathering everything into an omnibus bill is that it really highlights the exclusionary character of the laws.
Right, right. Yeah. The fact that there are just so many. And, you know, when you look into the past, over the past 5 years, we have been able to get some exclusions removed. And it feels like slow going.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that they are being removed puts it to the forefront that these exclusions do exist, and that people are speaking out about it, and legislators are recognizing that this is a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, so what's the status of the omnibus bill at this point?
At this point, the omnibus bill did pass the Assembly and was forwarded to the Senate, and as of yesterday, the Senate and Assembly have closed up shop without moving any further on this bill.
Hmm.
I believe they're not expected to come back into session until sometime in the fall, because they haven't even passed a budget. And mm-hmm. the way that it looks at this point, they're not too hot to trot to get it passed quickly either.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to take some time pushing that budget through so that everybody gets what they want. And what the Assembly has done is they have worded things in such a way with their bills that in order for the Senate to let me back up just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The Senate has proposed about $70 million towards agricultural economic development within the budget, and in so doing, they have caused the Assembly to come back by saying, okay, well, if you want $70 million towards agricultural development in the state, then we're going to ask you to remove some of these exclusions against the farm workers. So basically, our exclusions due to the friends that we have in the Assembly have kind of been tied into the budget that the Senate is looking to have passed. So
mm-hmm.
very possibly, some of the exclusions will come off the books in order to get the Senate's budget passed.
Mm-hmm. So do you have any explanation for the fact that the assembly passed the bill so overwhelmingly. I mean, what was it? It was only 32 or so assembly people voted against it or something.
Right. There were very few in the end. I would have to believe that what has happened is that in the past, especially during Farmworker Advocacy Day, as well as, you know, having our supporters through the rest of the year, keeping in contact with their legislators, just that we have been able to provide them with the information that they've needed to see what these exclusions are doing to farmworkers who are very vital to the agriculture in the state. And certainly, you know, we're not looking to bring agriculture down, but we are looking to raise up the level for farmworkers as well. And so we've been putting that forth to the assembly, and, you know, we've been trying to do the same among the Senate members, but I think that we've succeeded in the assembly in having their constituents express concern, and they're listening.
Yeah, last year I was on a legislative visit speaking to an aide to one of the senators, and the aide told us that, you know, this was the first time that the senator had heard from anyone on the side of the farm workers, and he standardly votes against lifting the exclusions because the people he's heard from are, you know, from the growers, which
right.
I thought was not the best way to operate
right.
and decide how to vote, but it seems to be political reality.
Right, right.
Yeah,
yeah, and I believe that in the past, certain legislators have probably been overlooked, partly because of in the planning of the day, you know, trying to get. It is a statewide effort,
mm-hmm.
and there are people and organizations statewide who are working for the rights of farm workers, but they're not always going to be able to find people in every single district who are willing to come to Albany that day and speak to their senator or their assembly person. And so I think that we were able to step up a little bit more this year and get out a little bit more about our word and have more people who were interested in coming to meet with their legislators. So,
mm-hmm. So what could our listeners do to help get this omnibus bill passed to influence the Senate? Is there anything?
Well, there are a lot of different ways that people could get involved if they were interested in doing so. You know, senators and assembly people have local offices, and they're usually, if they're not personally accessible, they usually have people in their offices who are. So making local visits is one way, or just sending a letter. A lot of times, mm-hmm. you know, just verbalizing that you are in support of the rights of farm workers and you would like to see these exclusions removed can make an impact on your legislator.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, those are the easiest ways.
Right. Yeah, and we're going to give contact information at the end of the program about how to get in touch with some of the activists and advocacy groups. I wanted to ask one more question. What future do you see for the organizing of farm workers in New York State? I mean, if the exemption excluding farm workers from right to collective bargaining, right to organizing is lifted, do you think that state labor leaders will start to really get behind organizing efforts for farm workers?
Yeah, I absolutely think that they would be able to do that. We have a lot of labor leaders in the state who are already behind getting the exclusions removed.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, the Labor Religion Coalition. We have United Farm Workers has been working very closely with our organization, CETA, which is the Independent Farm Worker Center, which is hoping to become the state's first farm worker union
mm-hmm.
should the collective bargaining restrictions be removed. So I believe that the labor leaders who have been so vociferous to this point certainly would be standing behind CETA, and that is what they want to do. They want to uphold CETA as being the first possible farm worker union in New York.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thanks a lot for speaking with us.
You're very welcome.
That was Tara Thibault of Rural and Migrant Ministries. For more information about the growing movement on behalf of farmworkers in New York State, contact Farmworker Legal Services at 716-325-3053 or Rural and Migrant Ministries at 845-485-8627. Para información en español, llama a cita el Centro Independiente de Trabajadores Agrícolas, 845-651-5570. This information will be available on the Unwelcome Guests website, www.radioforall.org/unwelcome.
Come, come on, you think you'll drive me crazy, well, come on. Come on, you and his army, you and your cronies, come on, come on.
That was Radiohead with You and Whose Army. You're listening to WEOS Geneva Ithaca or WXXE Fenner Syracuse. This is Unwelcome Guests.